The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
And it's Friday! Yay! Welcome to it. I am Nicole Sandler, coming to you live from Coral Springs, Florida, on the Progressive Voices Network at NicoleSandler.com. We're on Netroots Radio. We're on Verdant Square Radio, the newest outlet, formerly known as GDPR Radio, Air Progressive and FYI Nation and a few other outlets, Facebook Live, Twitch, Periscope, still not on YouTube. And it looks like we're going to be suspended through the middle of October unless I can get this fixed. Anyway, I am uploading the shows to YouTube after the fact. We just can't stream live on YouTube right now. Damn them. Anyway, welcome to a Friday. We are done. The Democratic National Convention 2020 is in the history books. And it did make history. It was something completely different from every other political convention so far. And as much as people were dreading it, as far as political conventions go, it wasn't too bad. There's something to be said for not doing it in an arena with a bunch of half-drunk, you know, convention-going delegates. Nothing against delegates, but, you know, when people get into those kind of settings, convention settings, their inner child comes out, and there's nothing wrong with that either. But there's some kind of disconnect when it's, you know, a political convention. You're nominating the person who hopefully will become president of the United States. The juxtaposition with, you know, silly convention hats, and I maybe it's because I haven't been to one. And if I were at one, I'm sure I would get into the spirit and enjoy it. But when you're at home watching it, a lot of time it's just like, oh, get on with it already. And this did. So despite the fact that I'm still, you know, less than thrilled with the final matchup, I'm thrilled that we are, you know, within, what, 75 days or so of voting Donald Trump out of office, knock on wood laminate. That's what we need to do. So I'm trying to keep my enthusiasm up. And so I'm going to save all the butts for after, I guess. You know me, this is really difficult for me because it's my tendency to rail against the fuck-ups that I see around us. And though I can point at the Trump administration and the Republicans every day and you know, list them one after another, I also have some disagreements with the way the Democrats are doing things. And it's my nature to call them out. But I'm biting my tongue, and I probably shouldn't. And I guess this is where I need to hear from you guys. I need your guidance. Do I go full out and say, get your heads out of your asses? Why are you not, you know, embracing the idea of Medicare for all? I get it that, you know, it's not Joe Biden's thing, but maybe embrace the idea of moving towards that. You know, what happened was this week with all the other festivities that we saw over the air between 9 and 11 p.m. Eastern for the last four nights, there was still some business taking place. And one of those points of business was the vote on the platform, the party platform. And I got to tell you, there are quite a few delegates who voted against the Democratic Party platform this time out. And the reason being, the main reason, well, mostly because they not included in the platform was Medicare for All. John Nichols has a great piece up at The Nation today. And the headline reads, Medicare for All message to Joe Biden. And the subtitle says, Biden is nominated, but even some of his own delegates say that he should embrace a single-payer response to America's healthcare crisis. And let me read. It's a quick article, and it goes to today's guest, and that's why Wendell Potter is going to join us later on in the hour. And if you've been a listener for a decade or so, you remember Wendell Potter. Wendell Potter was the insurance industry whistleblower who came out, who left his job at Cigna because he was so disturbed by what the scam that the insurance industry was pulling over the American people. And he spilled the beans. He told us the truth. He's the only one to this day who's done it. And I'm forever grateful to Wendell Potter. So again, he's got a new organization he's just founded. We'll tell you all about it when he joins me at the bottom of the hour. But back to John Nichols at The Nation, he wrote, on the second night of a Democratic National Convention where party leaders have gone out of their way to foster an image of unity, Democrats nominated Joe Biden for the presidency, and then he moderated a discussion about expanding access to health care. But a substantial number of dissenting Democratic delegates, including many rising stars from the party's progressive wing, urged him to make a stronger stand on the issue. The delegates, some of whom were Biden backers, weren't trying to trip up the nominee's run against President Trump and the Republicans. They were trying to strengthen it by urging the former vice president and the Democratic Party he now leads to meet the moral and the practical demands of an urgent moment shaped by the coronavirus pandemic and mass unemployment. The dissenting Democrats sent their message to Biden by voting no on a party platform that fails to make a clear commitment to developing and instituting a single-payer Medicare for all healthcare system. They did not have the critical mass to block the platform, but that didn't prevent them from making morally sound and politically practical arguments for the bolder approach that is supported by 69% of all Americans and 88% of Democrats. Ro Khanna, a leading progressive in the House who serves as co-chair of the California delegation to the convention, said, "I can't in good conscience support a platform without Medicare for all. In this pandemic, millions have lost their jobs and their health coverage. Now is the moment to say healthcare shouldn't be dependent on your employment. Healthcare should be a universal right." Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib said, "I constantly hear from constituents demanding we push for a single-payer system and away from this for-profit system that is leaving people to suffer and die just because they cannot afford health care. As a party, we must push for a future where every resident has the ability to thrive. That means we need a platform that works to rid our society of oppression and greed. Unfortunately, in my view, this platform does not do enough." And then John Nichols continues. He says, "Before the convention, more than 700 delegates signed a petition circulated by Progressive Democrats of America, RootsAction.org, and other groups that featured a pledge to vote against any platform that does not include a plank supporting universal single-payer Medicare for all. In the days leading up to Tuesday night's presidential nomination roll call vote and the presentation of the platform, a number of delegates to this year's virtual convention tweeted images of ballots with their no votes. Many attached messages signaling their frustration with a platform that says, 'Democrats believe that healthcare is a right, not a privilege, and our healthcare system should put people before profits, but that only offers a public option.' Most of the no votes on the platform came from Sanders backers, like Cori Bush, who just made national headlines after beating veteran Representative Lacey Clay in the Missouri primary. She said, "I'm proud to have voted for Bernie Sanders, but I had to vote against the platform. My people are dying, and I cannot support a platform that does not include Medicare for all, which would save lives, tens of thousands of lives, literally." And then it goes on to talk about AOC and her stand. And it says the article concludes with Biden, who sought the party's nomination without success in 1988 and 2008, won it with ease Tuesday, securing 3,558 delegate votes to 1,151 for Sanders. But even some of his own delegates were signaling that he needs a bolder platform. Former Georgia State Senator Vincent Fort announced, "I am a Biden delegate, but I couldn't vote for a platform that didn't support Medicare for all when 27 million have lost job-based health insurance in crisis. Support for Medicare for all," he said, "is a moral imperative." And that's how I feel. you know, I was just reading over the Biden-Harris healthcare plan. And it has a public option. But a public option is not Medicare for All. A public option is what we needed 10 years ago when they passed the Affordable Care Act. And it's something that, that we'll talk with Wendell Potter about when he joins us, because we had this discussion 10 years ago on this very program, or a similar facsimile of it. And, you know, that was the consensus then. And sorry, but I know it's not nice to speak ill of the former president, but that's where Barack Obama really screwed up. Because he took the public option off the table before the table had even been set for dinner. So there's that. So anyway, we'll get on with it. Wendell Potter will join us, our guest today on the Nicole Sandler Show. All right. I'm trying to think. Oh, I know what I want to play for you as a funny. I don't have a song for you today. I have mixed feelings about the convention. I did, you know, I like the streamlined, fast pace of it. So I didn't get frustrated with all the stuff in the arena. Part of it probably, you know, jealousy that I'm not there, but I digress. I enjoyed the four MCs. They had one for each evening. It started with, what's her name? Oh, I can picture her from Desperate Housewives. And I'm drawing a blank on her name right now. It'll come to me when I'm not thinking of it. Tracy Ellis Ross was one night. Kerry Washington was one night. The Desperate Housewives woman. Why can't I think of her name? Anyway, it'll come to me when I'm not thinking of it. And last night, it was Julia Louis-Dreyfus. And I was thrilled when I saw it was her. And I thought, okay, she's going to have fun with this. And indeed, she did. Eva Longoria. Thank you. Eva Longoria. And so, yes. So, but last night was Julia Louis-Dreyfus, and it was interesting that I went on Facebook, you know, throughout the night, and I saw somebody commented, "Is anyone else as angry as I am? Why is she making jokes? This is serious. She should not be making jokes. This is not funny." And I thought, well, yeah, I think you are the only one, because I thought she was very funny. So the people at Now This News put together a compilation of Julia Louis-Dreyfus's comedy. So that is today's funny on the Nicole Sandler Show. Here we go.
Joe Biden goes to church so regularly that he doesn't even need tear gas and a bunch of federalized troops to help him get there.
Watch Julia Louis-Dreyfus roast Trump at the DNC.
When Donald Trump spoke at his inauguration about American carnage, I assumed that was something he was against. Not a campaign promise.
Ooh.
Right now, you can text VOTE to 30330 to learn about all of your voting options and make the best plan for how to vote in your community, wherever you are. An easy way to remember 30330 is that's the year Donald Trump will finally release his tax returns. 30330. It's actually not that hard to remember. Watch. Person, woman, man, camera, TV, 30330. Anyone can do it. 30330. That would be the president's golf score if he didn't cheat.
Ooh.
Okay, look. I'll admit that was a little nasty, but we all know he's a cheater.
Yeah.
And I'm proud to be a nasty, nasty woman. These last few nights have been going so well, we've decided to add a fifth night where we will just play Michelle Obama's speech on a loop. Tonight, I couldn't be prouder to be a loyal union member, a passionate climate activist, and a patriotic Democrat. Or as Donald Trump will call me in a tweet tomorrow, a washed-up horse-faced no-talent has-been with low ratings. Well, with all due respect, sir, it takes one to know one.
Ooh.
If we all vote, there is nothing Facebook, Fox News, and Vladimir Putin can do to stop us. Joe Biden shares John Lewis's belief that every vote matters. Personally, I plan to follow the example of six current cabinet members, Vice President Pence, and President Trump himself, and vote by mail. I first met Joe Biden when I was doing my show, Veep. I played the vice president, and he was, in fact, the vice president. And we hit it off immediately. Soon after, I was asked to be on the cover of a magazine. Remember those? And I was so excited. It was like, oh, what's it going to be? People or Vogue or Rolling Stone? Well, it turns out it was for Arrive, the official onboard magazine of Amtrak, which nobody ever reads, even though it's free. And the day it came out, my phone rang, and it was the vice president telling me he loved the cover and the whole article, and that it was one of the best issues of Arrive he had ever read. And that is just one of the many reasons that I wanted to be here tonight for Joe. And to remind you that Joe Biden not only knows how to read, but also he reads everything. A couple of years ago, I was diagnosed with cancer, and I was absolutely terrified. One of the first people who called me was Joe. His real warmth and kindness on that call, man, I gotta say, it made me cry. Our current president has made me cry too, but it's never had anything to do with his warmth or kindness. Joe Biden's empathy is genuine. You can feel it. That's why President Obama asked Joe to head up the cancer moonshot. President Obama knows what we all know. Joe Biden understands suffering and loss and sacrifice. This year, we're going to elect a president who's honest, experienced, and intelligent. A president who actually believes in the rule of law, who will restore dignity and normalcy to the White House and the soul of this nation. And boy, won't that be something.
Oh, yeah. All right. There you go. Julia Louis Dreyfus. She was very funny. I thought she was great. And I thought it was spot on. So there's your funny for today. Julia Louis Dreyfus. Yeah. So that happened. And here we are. There's a lot of news to get to. I'll tell you what we'll do is take a very quick time out, give our friends at the Progressive Voices Network a moment to get some business taken care of, and we'll be right back on the Nicole Sandler Show. So while they're in commercials, let me play for you one other thing that I thought was just amazing. This is the wrong video. I thought I pulled, that's Julia Louis. Okay. Oh, I see. She introduces him. One of the best parts I thought of last night, you know, they always do the human interest thing, the tug at the heartstrings. And I think something they really did very effectively was show that Joe Biden is actually a human being, a compassionate, empathetic, caring human being. And those are qualities that do not exist within Donald Trump. He wouldn't know empathy if it hit him over the head. He doesn't understand. I guess today they're having the funeral for his brother at the White House. When his brother died, he was out playing golf. He allegedly went to see him, knowing his brother was on the verge of dying. And instead of being there with his brother, he went out to play golf. And then when he started commenting on him, instead of talking about what a wonderful man his brother was, he said, oh, he was so proud of me. It was all about him. So seeing somebody who is honestly compassionate and selfless and caring is a nice thing. And I get it. I'd rather at a thing like this hear how Joe Biden is going to save us all from COVID-19, how he's going to get the economy back and going, how he's going to get people back to work. But they do spend an inordinate amount of time on the personal side. This was one personal story I really appreciated because it featured a kid on whom Joe Biden made a huge impression. The kid is from New Hampshire, and well, I'll let him tell the story. Here we go.
I want to introduce you now to a young man who Vice President Biden met earlier this year in New Hampshire and helped to find his voice. Say hello to Braden Harrington.
Braden. Here we go.
Hi, my name is Braden Harrington, and I'm 13 years old. And without Joe Biden, I wouldn't be talking to you today. About a few months ago, I met him in New Hampshire. He told me that we were members of the same club. We stutter. It was really amazing to hear that someone like me became vice president. He told me about a book of poems by Yeats he would read out loud to practice. He showed me how he marks his addresses to make them easier to say out loud. So I did the same thing today. And now I'm here talking to you today. About the future, about our future. My family often says when the world feels better before talking about something normal, like going to the movies. We all want the world to feel better. We need the world to feel better. I'm just a regular kid, and in a short amount of time, Joe Biden made me more confident about something that's bothered me my whole life. Joe Biden cared. Imagine what he could do for all of us. Kids like me are counting on you to elect someone we can all look up to. Someone who cares. Someone who will make our country and the world feel better. We're counting on you to elect Joe Biden.
That, wow, what a brave, amazing young man. And what kills me is what Cynthia just said in the chat room at NicoleSandler.com on the Listen Live page. I can just see Trump making fun of that kid. You know he would. You know he would. And the rest of us are going, what an amazing story. And then we later learned that, yes, Joe Biden took the kid's phone number, called him, worked with him regularly. And then we find out that when he meets somebody with a stutter, Joe gives out his personal phone number. So there's humanity there. There's humanity there. So if you want to support Joe Biden, we heard it over and over and over and over again last night. Text VOTE to 30330. And I know you're saying, I know that number. I've heard that before. Where did I hear that before?
Go to Joe 30330.
Joe.
30330.
Go
to Joe 30330.
Joe 30330.
Joe.
Joe.
30330.
Joe. All right. Good natured fun there. That's good natured fun. All right. So let's see. What there's news. Let's get to the news. I guess Progressive Voices spots didn't fire. Oh, well, I hate it when that happens. All right. So now let's do this.
I read the news today. Hi.
All right. Well, I guess, you know, you've heard enough about the convention. Let's move. Let's jump ahead to the rest of the news, shall we? Because this morning there was a hearing. Yes. Up on the Hill. And hey, somebody who should probably get Joe Biden's phone number is new Postmaster General Louis DeJoy, because I noted a bit of a stutter there. Hey, Louis. Incoming President Joe Biden can help you with that. Yeah. Anyway, what happened today was that Trump mega donor and newly installed Postmaster General Louis DeJoy testified before a Senate subcommittee this morning about the policy changes he's made that, look like they're sabotaging the U.S. Postal Service. So in a nod to the mess, though, that is 2020, this hearing was held over Zoom or video conferencing because, you know, it's safe for kids to go back to school, but not for a Senate hearing to be held in person. Just making sure I get that straight. But the first Democrat slated to ask questions after the chair and the ranking member asked questions was Delaware's Tom Carper. And they called for him. What's his name from Wisconsin? The idiot. Ron Johnson is the chair of this committee, the subcommittee. And he's like, Senator Carper? Carper, I guess he's not there. Okay, we'll move on to Langford. And then all of a sudden you hear...
Buck, buck, buck.
And in case you missed that, let me share it for you again.
Buck, buck, buck.
Fuck, fuck, fuck. Because Tom Carper couldn't get his video going, and then all of a sudden it went. And someone said... unmute your mic. And then someone else said, oh, it's unmuted.
Buck, buck, buck.
Yeah, it was a moment of levity. Anyway, I don't have clips from it. I can tell you some takeaways. DeJoy says it's an outrageous claim that he's trying to affect how people vote. He said that mail delays are a separate issue and that he will not put back sorting machines because he said they're not necessary. To which I screamed, why not? Where were the follow-up questions? Nobody asked, why not? Why are they not necessary? I've been hearing from all kinds of letter carriers that they are indeed necessary, that the mail has slowed down exponentially since they took these things out of service. And he said he will not put them back. So basically, not a whole lot was answered today. It looks like I learned two things about Louis DeJoy. One, he's got a little bit of a stutter, so he should talk to Joe Biden. And two, he's a liar. Boy, some things run in that party. He is a liar. So now we wait until Monday. And on Monday, we have the House Oversight Committee hearing. And guess who sits on that committee? Katie Porter. And Katie Porter already tweeted out that she is ready. And hopefully, Mr. DeJoy will be ready too.
Buck, buck, buck.
Oh, yeah. that wasn't a stutter. And in other news, you know about this. Stephen Bannon, Donald Trump's former chief strategist, was arrested and charged with fraud yesterday. He was pulled off a 150-foot yacht in Long Island Sound off the coast of Connecticut, owned by some Chinese billionaire. You know, Russian billionaire, Chinese billionaire. I get them all mixed up. Anyway, Bannon, prosecutors in New York accused Bannon and three others of participating in a scheme to defraud people who donated to a We Build the Wall effort to raise money for the construction of the border wall that I thought Mexico was going to pay for. Anyway, they were Bannon, Brian Kolfage, Andrew Badalato, and Timothy Shea were charged with conspiracy to commit wire fraud and conspiracy to commit money laundering. It was a GoFundMe crowdfunding campaign. It raised more than $25 million, which was all supposed to go to the wall. But, you know, Bannon and his cronies siphoned money off. Bannon received more than $1 million of it through a supposed nonprofit that he controls, and sent hundreds of thousands to Kolfage. He entered a not guilty plea yesterday and was released on a $5 million bond. Now, Steve Bannon had been slated to appear at the Republicans' convention that gets underway Monday. I guess he still could because he's out on bond. Now, that would be interesting. All right, enough of the news. I told you we've got Wendell Potter coming up. So what I want to do before bringing Wendell on, though, is play a short video that Wendell posted just a couple of days ago to announce the launch of a new organization. So while you're watching Wendell, I'm going to get Wendell's shot set up to bring him in live here. So take it away, the virtual Wendell Potter.
Hi, I'm Wendell. Former health insurance executive turned whistleblower and advocate for a healthcare system that actually places care over industry profits. And I'm excited to announce the launch of the Center for Health and Democracy, a nonprofit organization that will work to transform both the U.S. healthcare system and our corrupt political system. A political system that enables health insurers and other moneyed interests to profit at the expense of the rest of us. Our core belief at the Center for Health and Democracy is that healthcare should not be driven by industry profits and greed, but by the needs of every American to get the quality care they need without concern for cost. My team and I realized during the primaries earlier this year that the Center for Health and Democracy is urgently needed. In every single state, exit polls showed that huge numbers of voters wanted major healthcare reform. But powerful corporations and their lobbyists continue to keep reform from happening. That's why our mission is twofold: to win the messaging battle by fighting against corporate propaganda, and to do the patriotic work that's necessary to ensure the healthcare reforms we need are finally enacted. The Center for Health and Democracy will serve as a counter to corporate lobbyists and spinmeisters who spread disinformation and exert undue political influence on the policymaking process. We'll do this through groundbreaking reports and exposés, war room-style communications, and political engagement. During this pandemic, we have seen the consequences of allowing big corporations to call the shots. Health insurers are making record profits, while many doctors and hospitals are barely able to stay afloat. And millions of Americans have lost their insurance along with their jobs. To do this work, we need your financial support. It will help us build the home base for exposing the profiteering of healthcare companies and achieving the healthcare transformation we all know we need. To learn more, go to Center for Health and Democracy.
.org. I cut him off before the .org came in. Wendell Potter, Center for Health and Democracy.org. Oops, hold on. I'm getting an echo. There we go. It's all fixed. Wendell Potter, congratulations and welcome back to the show.
Oh, Nicole, thank you so much. Thanks for playing that video. I really appreciate it.
Well, I figured that's a great way to introduce what this is all about. And it's a wonderful video, and it does explain it. And, you know, I started railing at the top of the program about, you know, how a lot of delegates, as heartened as I was by this convention, I grudgingly watched and was won over in a few areas. I'm still, you know, I'm with the delegates who voted against the platform. And the reason they voted against the platform is because it did not include any plans for a single-payer Medicare for All system of health care. And this is something we've been talking about for over a decade now. And so I'm so glad to see you stepping up, because the fight must continue when you know, the Joe Biden getting elected on November 3rd, hopefully, is only the beginning of the battle. And then we have to wage a battle anew to push for the priorities that we know are necessary, especially now in a pandemic. So is that why
you're
decided
right.
to do this?
It absolutely is exactly why I decided to do it, because, as you know, I've been advocating for healthcare reform for a long time. We've made some progress over the years, not nearly enough, as we know and have talked a lot about. And I've talked to lots of advocates and advocacy groups about this, and there's no shortage of passion and really support for Medicare for All. But what's holding us back is money and politics. It is the ability of the entrenched special interests, the big companies like I used to work for, mm-hmm. that can spend so much money in so many different ways to bamboozle the public, but also by politicians and influence public policy. So we need to do both. We need to advocate for healthcare reform. We need to advocate for ending the corruption in our political system, like Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren and a few others have talked about for a long time.
You know, the encouraging thing for me is that, you know, I was reading a story John Nichols just posted at thenation.com this afternoon about the delegates voting against the platform. And it wasn't enough to derail the platform, but it was enough for the party to sit up and take notice. And it wasn't only the Bernie Sanders delegates. There were quite a few Joe Biden delegates as well who said, no, this is not good enough. Yeah. But what I'm seeing is a lot of the the squad and squad adjacent, I'll call them, delegates like Cori Bush, who just won her primary, mm-hmm. who will be elected in November because she's mm-hmm. in a very blue district, and others, Ro Khanna, and, mm-hmm. A lot of the progressives who are finally growing in numbers in the House caucus, are delegates said, I can't go along with this. Now they're backing Joe Biden. They've endorsed him. AOC yep. is a perfect example, but they're still going to fight for what's necessary. And especially now we're in the midst of a global pandemic. You worked at Wendell Potter in the health insurance industry for so many years. Right. I'm guessing at some point Cigna and the other companies you work for prepared for such a devastation as we're going through now, or did they?
They were not prepared in a real sense. They were prepared to make money during this pandemic, and that's what they've done. I've often said that these companies know how to do one thing, and that is to make money. And they've been continuing to take in all the premiums that people have been paying. That includes employers for a lot of people.
Yep.
they have not been paying out very much in claims so far this year.
Isn't
so
that interesting? Result, is that because there are non-essential service yes. people aren't going to the doctor unless there's an emergency, unless there's something really wrong?
That's right. And I've been looking at the earnings reports from these big companies, and they really have had windfall profits this year. They've been more profitable than they've ever been in their history. And that's because they've not been paying out much in claims because so many elective procedures were canceled.
Yeah. Wow. This is one of the weird side effects, unintended consequences, perhaps, of what we're all experiencing is the little guy is being hurt. And I'm not just talking about healthcare providers, but the big corporations are cleaning up. Little guys, mom and pop businesses are going out of business, but the Home Depots, which is now an essential service, and the Amazons and the big giant conglomerates, most of whom don't pay any taxes, are cleaning up. It's a windfall for them as well. There's a real disconnect going on here. But
there is, and it's very troubling because a lot of small businesses just will not recover from this, and a lot of people will not get their jobs back. They will not get their health insurance back. So we are really, whoever is the next president, let's hope that it's Joe Biden, they're going to be facing a real challenge of rebuilding our economy and doing something about healthcare.
Yeah. So Wendell Potter, I went to joebiden.com/healthcare and I read through the Joe Biden or the Biden-Harris healthcare plan. And, it's to improve, it says, as president, Biden will protect the Affordable Care Act from these continued attacks. He opposes every effort to get rid of this historic law and build on the Affordable Care Act by giving Americans more choice, reducing health care costs, and making our health care system less complex to navigate. And the first element on it that they talk about is a public option. Then they also talk about bringing down premiums. Why is this the wrong way to go?
Well, it would be much better if we could pass legislation like Pramila Jayapal and Debbie Dingell are the lead sponsors of in the House of Representatives, which, by the way, has a majority of the House Democrats signed on.
Is that H.R. 676? Is it still that number or is it something different?
No, it's not that number. Okay. It's 1384 now. Okay. We're not able to keep 676. Okay. But it's a good bill. In fact, it is more fleshed out than 676 was.
Good.
And it's not exactly a companion piece to Bernie Sanders' bill, but it's pretty close. So that is the legislation that should be passed. And I think that after the election, we will see that bill will be reintroduced. And I'm hopeful that more Democrats will actually come on as co-sponsors. I'm hearing that some candidates who've not, current members of Congress who've not signed on it might do so after the election. And I think some of the incoming freshmen will definitely sign on to this bill. So I think there will be a renewed push. I know Pramila Jayapal, the congresswoman from Washington State, will be pushing that. And it's going to be important for those of us who are advocates to push as much as we can to renew our efforts to support this. If we find that Congress is not moving the Medicare for All bill through Congress for whatever reason. Nancy Pelosi is not a co-sponsor of it.
Yeah.
And maybe they are going to be on board with a public option. We're going to be looking at that very, very closely. Here's what, if that's a way you're going to go, if that has to be a step toward Medicare for All, and this is how it needs to be put together.
Absolutely. And so now with that, Wendell Potter, as we played the video before you came on, you have launched a new organization, the Center for Health and Democracy. It's at centerforhealthanddemocracy.org. Tell us, what is it? What is this new group? Tell us all about it.
It's the first of a family of nonprofit organizations that we're putting together. This one is the Center for Health and Democracy, where we will also have a 501c3 that'll be kind of enable us to do more education work. But the Center for Health and Democracy that we've launched right now enables us to do political work. We will be pushing in ways that you can't do with some other nonprofit organizations. We'll be advertising and being able to even endorse candidates if we decide to do that. So we're going to be political. We're going to be, on the one hand, we'll be having a political operation, and we'll have a policy shop. We will be bringing in some very good people to assess legislation and proposals, and helping us to determine how to weigh in on whatever the next Congress and the administration decides to do. But we also are going to be advocating for reforming our corrupt political system. We've got to do something to address campaign finance reform, gerrymandering, and other thing, and lobbying reform mm-hmm. that curtails the ability of the entrenched special interests, the big corporations. They so far have been able to largely call the shots in Washington, the state capitals. We've got to bring an end to that if we're going to have any hope of really moving forward with healthcare reform that we need.
So this is, you said it's a 501c3. This is not a PAC or a super PAC.
It's not.
Okay.
It's not at this point. I said we're beginning a family of organizations. Mm-hmm. We do have plans for a PAC. So as long as we have to play the game by the rules that we have right now, we've got to have some money to play the game. We want to reform the system, but we also want to push ahead with healthcare reform. So we've got to go down these parallel tracks. And I hope those who are listening and everyone who knows anything about the work that we're doing will also understand the vital importance of also spending as much energy and time and even money on political reform as we do on our big projects, whether it's healthcare reform or climate mm-hmm. or whatever it might be. Gun
right.
control.
You got to be able to walk and chew gum at the same time. And if we can't be singularly focused. I mean, and look, we also can't downplay the mess that we're in right now. And it seems like every time, at least in the last, you know, few decades, Republican gets in office, trashes everything, Democrats mm-hmm. have to come in and clean up after them. We cannot forget, first of all, Bill Clinton, love him or hate him, the economy did very well under him. And when he left, the economy was in good shape, right? W comes in, trashes everything. Then when Obama takes over, we're losing 600,000 jobs a month. The economy was in, it was the Great Recession. And slowly but surely we recovered. And throughout the 8 years of the Obama administration, the economy grew, jobs came back. And then Trump comes in, riding on the success of the Democrats' economy and mm-hmm. keeps going up. Until it crashes due to, well, the pandemic, I don't blame on him, but I do blame his mismanagement and the fact that we're in this horrible position today. I fully blame on him. So now we're in the same place where unemployment's over 10%. Millions of people are facing foreclosure or eviction. The jobs are not coming back despite what Donald Trump wants to tell us. He's touting the most job gains ever. Well, they're a fraction of the jobs that were lost that have come back, and they may not be back permanently. And so again, the Democrats have to come in and play cleanup, and this time it's going to be even harder.
It's going to be a big mess to clean up. And people bought into Trump saying he was going to come in and clean up the swamp. Well, what he has done is just kind of restock the swamp with swamp creatures.
Exactly.
And their political cronies, their friends of his in big business that are running, like the Secretary of Health and Human Services came right out of pharma. And you've got the foxes right now not only guarding, but ruining, devastating the hen house. So we've got a lot of work to do. The next administration will absolutely have to clean that up. And that's why political reform is so important. After that cleanup, or as part of that cleanup, we've got to make sure that doesn't happen again. We cannot let the foxes come in and take control ever again. And we cannot give the keys to our government to these big corporations like we've seen them be given during the Trump administration.
Right. So Wendell Potter, there are obviously a lot of things to be done reading over this healthcare plan on Joe Biden's page. I mean, have you obviously you've looked at it. Do you see some malleability there? I mean, do you see who the Biden camp has on this issue? I mean, do you feel confident that there are decent people working on this? I mean, I worry about their vision for a public option, because 10 years ago, 11 years ago, actually, we started talking about the bill writing that took place in 2009 after Obama took office. In what was like three different committees were writing different versions of the Affordable Care Act, and they debated it, and they merged them, and they debated it more, and they voted, despite the Republicans telling us they passed it in the dead of night when nobody knew what was going on. This went on for over a year, and we talked about it a lot on Air America Radio, on this show. And you wrote an amazing book about the process, by the way, it's 10 years old now, but it's a great slice of history, and I recommend people check it out. It's called Deadly Spin, and you recounted, we lived through it together. We talked a lot in those days, and looking back on that from 10 years ago, did we do anything wrong? Did we make mistakes? What fell apart in that negotiation? Why don't we have a public option today?
You know, advocates were not paying as much attention as they should, and I think will, to just how the insurance companies, big drug companies, and big hospital companies were writing big chunks of the bill. And we weren't paying attention to the ability of the insurance industry to ultimately kill the public option. As you may recall, the House did pass its bill, and it had language that would create a public option. Mm-hmm. It wasn't as good as it should have been, but it was in there. But on the Senate side, the insurance industry really was able to call in some chits. And they got Joe Lieberman, who is a former Democrat, to be the guy to kill the public option. So that's what happened. We've got to be on guard. We've got to make sure that we are smarter, paying more attention, and advocate more strongly, and insist that if they go the route of the public option again, this is what it has to look like. It has to be a public option that is administered by the government, not by a private insurance company. It has to be run Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. It has to have automatic enrollment, that if you lose your job, you're not going to lose your health insurance. You're going to be enrolled in that. It's got to make sure that the plan does not saddle people with high out-of-pocket costs. It has to be a plan that doesn't send money, obviously, to shareholders and to reward big executives. So we have some conditions, as we'll be watching this. This is what it's got to be. If you expect to have support from the progressive community, if this is the way you're going to go to get to Medicare for all, step by step, these are the steps you got to take.
Right. And the progressive community, again, is supporting the Biden-Harris ticket. We are not advocating for anything else but to vote for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris to get Donald Trump the hell out of there. But we're also saying you need to pay some attention to us. I don't know about you. I was a little offended by the inordinate amount of attention paid to Republicans and never Trumpers during the convention. I get politically why, but it seemed to me at the expense of progressives. If they really want to be a big tent, they could have welcomed them in and also gave more than a passing nod to the progressive flank of the party, which I think that was the only big mistake they made over the last few days. But that's a pretty big mistake. So I'm hoping that they are going to be receptive enough to hear those of us who've been fighting, you especially, for over a decade to do the right thing by the American people.
I agree with you, and I believe there will. I think part of this is just political show. And, you know, Biden certainly is not embracing Medicare for all, but there will be big pressure on him to get closer to that. And Kamala Harris is a co-sponsor of Bernie Sanders' bill in the Senate. So we got that.
Okay.
You know, a lot of folks were not necessarily overjoyed that she was the choice.
Well, she was kind of wishy-washy. I mean, I still remember the debate where the one she said, oh, yeah, I'm with them and, yeah, do away with the commercial health insurance. And then the next debate, when she was asked the question, she's like, oh, that's not what I meant.
I know. Yeah, it was. You're exactly right. You characterized it correctly. But on the other hand, there were a number of people on that stage who were hostile to the idea. So, you know, we got something better than what we could have possibly have had. But I do think, just back to what you were saying, there will be, I think, the progressives will come together, I'm confident, and apply more pressure. There is more support for Medicare for All than there was 10 years ago. There have been actually some hearings, and more people who are on these bills than ever before. Those numbers are going to increase after this election, I'm confident.
Right. So, and I hate to sound ageist because I'm not. I was a Bernie Sanders supporter. He was the oldest person in the race. But I also think that the Democratic Party has a bit of a problem where the leadership is very top heavy with the seniors in the caucus. And a lot of them are intractable just because they've been there for so long. And this is how they've always done things, which is not the reason to continue doing anything. So, you know, as more new blood, young energy, progressive energy comes in, I'm hoping they will move to the left. And I think, you know, they probably will.
I think they will.
Yeah.
I think they will. I do. I really do. And I think we were already seeing some of those older incumbents. They were primaried.
Yes.
And they've lost.
And some of them have.
So, yes. So I think we're going to see a congressional makeup that's different. Certainly in the House, but I think in the Senate as well, too.
I think so, too. And well, let's the House is the immediate thing because, you know, Nancy Pelosi really upset me yesterday in that she endorsed Joe Kennedy over the sitting senator from Massachusetts, Ed Markey, while Nancy Pelosi has approved of a DCCC policy that says you can't primary an incumbent. And I guess what put her over the edge was Ed Markey went hard on Joe Kennedy and because the fact that he's a Kennedy. I'm sorry, we do not have royalty in this country. And that is the wrong reason. It's one thing if you want to say Joe Kennedy's my guy, go for it. But because he insulted the Kennedy family, that's an anachronistic kind of thing that has no place in today's world.
No, and I share I was annoyed by that as well, too. It was not the right thing to do. He is a great senator and deserves reelection.
And he's a real progressive, and we need more progressive
voices.
He's
a very real
voices.
Progressive, which at the end of the day may be why she did what she did. I don't know.
I was also surprised that Bernie declined to endorse him. He said some very nice things about Senator Markey, but he said, I'm not weighing in on this one, which I thought was weird.
It is weird. I don't know what's going on.
I don't either. I don't either.
But it's trouble.
Yeah, I know.
I hope Markey's reelected because he is a good, strong, solid progressive.
Yes, he's not only great on Medicare for All, but he is the Senate sponsor of the Green New Deal. He is one of the most progressive members of the Senate. He's not as flamboyant and open and in your face as some of the others, but he is a real strong progressive who we need to keep there. So
we absolutely do.
So we got a lot of work between now and November 3rd to encourage not only, yes, we need to get rid of Trump and his cronies, but we also need to focus on those down ballot races and make sure that the Democrats take back the Senate so that when we get Joe Biden in, we can actually get things done. We can roll back those ridiculous tax cuts that saddled us with. Again, I'm not a deficit hawk, but that's what they're claiming. They can't do very much because of the huge deficit we're now running. Well, thank you, Donald Trump.
That's right. Exactly right. And we're to just restate what you said earlier. We're going to have a lot of damage that has to be cleaned up and fixed. But we can't, like you said earlier, too, we have to walk and chew gum at the same time. We've got to push progressive policies while you do the cleanup.
Yes.
And you really do have to clean the swamp for real.
Absolutely. So Wendell Potter, with the launch of the Center for Health and Democracy at centerforhealthandemocracy.org, you said you can advocate for certain candidates or policies. Are you going to endorse candidates in this cycle? Are you those who are most friendly to, say, Medicare for All?
I think we probably will. We're making that assessment. We want to make sure that we're doing the right thing. By the way, I have been on webinars with Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal and Congresswoman Katie Porter.
Oh, two of my favorites. Yes.
They're wonderful. And we did a webinar now some weeks ago for candidates who are running for Congress who are either supporting Medicare for All or want more information about it. So we're already doing some kind of work in that regard anyway. We're trying to help those who are running for Congress for the first time to get on board. And I think we're making some progress here.
Great. So somebody in the chat room asked, how is the Center for Health and Democracy funded?
Small dollar donations to a large extent. Reach out to us, sign up for our newsletter, for our information, donate if you can. But we're primarily a small dollar donation shop. We, you know, I spend a lot of my time raising money for the work that I do. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like being a candidate. You've got to raise money. But the bulk of our income comes from small dollars.
Okay, good to know.
Who support this work and know how important it is.
Right. So donate if you can. There's a lot of us who are in that boat. We get by on small dollar donations. Right. House of Roberts asked, is there enough of the Affordable Care Act left to function?
You know, it has been damaged during the Trump administration. There's no doubt about it. There are fewer people who are insured. One of the big flaws of the Affordable Care Act is it let insurance companies continue to push people into high deductible health plans.
Yep.
Premiums have been going up. So there is a lot that has to be fixed if, you know, before we can get anything better. We've got to plug up some of the big holes. But it did bring a lot of people into coverage. And if it went away, it could be really devastating for a lot of people. I know a lot of folks who are single payer supporters who were not the least bit happy that that's what we had to wind up with.
Yeah.
But some of them have been able for the first time to get health insurance because in the past they had pre-existing conditions.
Yes.
And they were out of luck. So yes, there are some really important elements that we cannot give up. We can't go back. And any bill that goes forward and beyond that has to make sure that we're keeping the best parts of the Affordable Care Act.
Sure. And we can't forget that November 10th is the date, 1 week after Election Day, the Trump administration goes in front of the Supreme Court.
That's right.
To argue that the entirety, what's left of it, should be trashed. So the guy who gets up there with his orange face and says, I'm signing an executive order to give cover pre-existing conditions, it's never been done before, is going to the Supreme Court to argue to take away protections for pre-existing conditions. It's opposite world. It's the opposite of everything he says.
It is. And
I'm in the boat that you described. You know, I'm a cancer survivor and I'm self-employed, and there was no way I was getting insurance before the Affordable Care Act. And thankfully it was there, because even though I was a melanoma survivor, then I was diagnosed with lung cancer. So the Affordable Care Act literally saved my life. And as much as problems I have with it, as expensive as it is, and the problems inherent in its makeup, it's still certainly better than what we had before.
Absolutely.
You know, we've only got like 2 minutes left, Wendell, but I want to ask you, there are commercials running nonstop on TV pushing these Medicare plans that they pay for everything. You have no premium. You have no deductible. We'll take you to the doctor's office. Hell, we'll even give you a gym membership and all this other stuff. It's Medicare Advantage. Why is Medicare Advantage, for people who don't understand yet, why is Medicare Advantage not a good thing?
Oh, they're terrible. They're operated by private insurance companies like the ones I work for. They have become cash cows. And the money comes from taxpayers. And so that's a terrible thing. But they operate just like private plans. You could be on the hook for big deductibles.
Mm-hmm.
You have a limited choice of doctors and hospitals.
Very
so people
much
don't
so.
Pay attention to that. You can have your doctor's opinion overruled by some bureaucrat at the healthcare company.
That's right.
Beware. Do not sign up for these plans.
They can deny you services. Yes. They can say, no, we're not going to cover that. Where traditional Medicare cannot, right?
They do it every single day.
Every day. And, you know, but there are people like us. Frankly, I'm too young for Medicare, sadly. My husband is on Medicare, and he's on a Medicare Advantage plan because it's all we can afford, because the traditional Medicare plans have gotten so expensive. If we get Medicare for All, the other thing that we will make happen is make it affordable and make it work for everyone.
Exactly.
So you don't have to have a Medicare Advantage plan.
Exactly. We need to not only expand it, but improve the Medicare program.
Absolutely. Wendell Potter, I'm so happy you're doing this. I look forward to learning a lot at the Center for Health and Democracy.org. Of course, follow Wendell on Twitter at Wendell Potter, and read Deadly Spin, because I got through it, I think, in two sittings because we lived it. But it's a good reminder of what we fought and what we're up against now. Wendell, always great talking to you. Thank you so much.
And Nicole, thank you so much.
See you soon. All right. You take care. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye.
You too now.
All right. Bye-bye. And next week, it is the Republican Convention. Oy, in all its glory. I probably won't watch. All right. I'll see you Monday. Have a great weekend, everyone. Bye.